You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Busted on that beat.
You hey, listened to that one, didn't you?
Yo, I listen. It's in your head. It's like an earworm. Everybody's got that. Everybody says that at least like once
a day.
A day.
At this point.
At this, yeah, for
yes.
sure. Yeah. Yeah. Man down. You a free throw.
Everything.
Yeah. I like to like just ask my kids, like, can I ask you a question? Like, what's up with these jabroni dudes trying to see comp? Like, I like to just ask, like, set them up with these rap verses all the time. So, yeah.
You know what I'm doing?
What's that?
Well, not with both kids, but with my daughter. I'll say things like, as we're finalizing this college decision,
yeah,
I'll throw out a question, and it's specific to a particular school.
Uh-huh.
And she'll just go, what are you doing? Like,
she feels manipulated.
No, I just, because I know whatever she says first is probably her honest reaction, thoughts, feelings. So, mm-hmm. like, I don't think I want to name schools,
yeah.
but for one school that she, it's publicly known, was okay. recruiting her, I'm like, what's up, Husky?
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's funny. You want to see what her reaction is?
What her reaction is. Yeah. Or one day I was just like.
You hit her with the, what's up, pirate?
I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
No, but I did do the. So where are you going to school?
Yeah.
And she gave me an answer.
Okay.
This was like a month ago, though. So that's not what yeah. we're rocking with right
all
now. Right.
Well, listen, it's like the decision with LeBron James all over again.
I'm taking my talents too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She's ready. She's ready. I think she's close.
I'm so proud of her.
Anyway.
I'm so excited. So,
how do the kids respond, though, when you do that?
They just laugh. Or they finish the rap or...
Okay.
Because yeah. they know I'm a jokester. Like, they know I'm a clown, and I'm just constantly, like, just not being serious. So
yeah.
they know that.
That's
I try cool. to get my wife. I trick her a lot with these.
Mm.
Yeah, on a regular basis. Because I will hold it till it's awkward, like, the question.
Literal yeah. dad jokes. Let me find out.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely dad
jokes. You're
joke
the dad jokes.
Central, for sure.
Okay.
So last week we talked about what women want.
Mm-hmm.
And today... we'll talk about what a lot of people want. And I hear this question a lot among Black folks, generational wealth. How do I create generational wealth? And I think it's because in our show, we've talked a lot about the fact that for a lot of us, we are generation one, meaning we are the first generation in the history of our family that has an opportunity to create wealth. And so we don't just want to create it. Like, we want to create it and have it reverberate and multiply and be just shifting the whole future of the landscape of our families.
Right.
That's the burden that a lot of us feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so today we're going to talk about it a little bit. And the impetus for this show, literally, like, all this is almost like ripped from the headlines, how they do mm-hmm. on Law & Order. A lot of our content is just things that we've lived and talked about during the week.
Things that we encounter.
So, client who just got a new job hit me like, hey, how do I set myself up like the Hermes family, the Kennedys, the Waltons? And I mean, like, the type of generational wealth that we're talking about, like creating.
Yeah.
Like a lot of these families have had wealth that goes back 100 years.
Yeah. And multiple generations ago. And so we want to be able to create it
that goes forward 100 years. And I always want to say, well, it would help if you could own slaves. Like that would probably help. But I can't.
Free labor.
Yeah, I can't.
You can have a business.
I can't say that.
Profitable.
Yeah.
And not have to pay the employees. I mean.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, the Walton family, like, they started their thing in the 60s, right? So.
Yeah, we weren't suggesting that all of these families were correct. Slave owners.
Yeah. We have no idea. But I'm just saying, like, that's
we have an idea.
That our legacy is that, like, yeah, sure. a lot of folks have made money off of our backs, and now it's our chance to finally get our comeuppance. And so we'll talk about generational wealth today. And so we'll study some of those families. Like, we actually pulled some case studies on those specific families. And we've also given you some examples of some Black families who today are actually making some major strides towards generational wealth. And we'll give you what I'll call the hardware and the software of how to get it done. Because some of it, it's technical. It's estate planning and things like that. And for others, it's the mentality of wealth and making sure that that mentality gets created, fostered, nourished inside of your family.
Absolutely.
So today's about generational wealth.
I like it. I'll allow it.
Thank you.
Let's do it.
Thank you. And you are still taking us to break, by the way. That's your...
I'm good with it.
Yeah.
You might have to tell me when, but...
That's so funny. So what is generational wealth? It's having assets, resources, and knowledge that passes down from one generation to the next. Unlike income, which is temporary, generational wealth focuses on creating lasting financial security through investments, businesses, real estate, and more. With generational wealth, there's financial security for future generations. There's a safety net for everybody with your bloodline. There's opportunity for education, entrepreneurship, and growth for everybody with your last name.
For everybody.
And then there's legacy. It's a tangible impact that, again, starts with you and continues on from generation to generation. And you just hope they don't mess it up.
Yes.
Are you feeling that burden of creating generational change in your family?
Not as much. I mean, if I do, it's not because the previous generation doesn't have wealth. It's more because this is what we do for a living. And we have so much information and case studies and data and experiences that I'm not sure that the folks in my household understand it. So I'm doing a lot of buy-in type of efforts.
Okay.
Because I don't know if they get it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of low-key education going on and incentives. Well, now I'm creating incentives to get the buy-in.
Yeah.
Literally just got off the phone with the college senior who's graduating in May.
Okay.
To give an update on younger sister.
Okay.
And we're like, whoo, sound like we're close to a full ride. I'm just like, yeah, but what's that got to do with you?
Wait, I'm sorry. Who said what's that got to do? This is what
I said my son, who's graduating from college in May.
Yeah.
I gave him an update on his sister.
Got you.
And he said, ooh, come through full ride.
Yeah.
That's literally what he said. And I said, yeah, that'd be great. What's that got to do with you? And he said, well, I signed a lease and the rent, the first month rent happens in June. And I'm like, no. We had this conversation.
So what does he think? That means your money's freed up for him to now
access? I said, no.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
That's not how this works. We had this conversation. He was like, yeah, but that was in September, October.
Yeah. That's a long time ago. You're talking about old stuff. Why are you always bringing up old stuff?
Same rules still apply, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
We're just talking about some things.
Yeah, no, that's hilarious that he's trying to get generational taken care of. He's trying to get
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I do think he feels a little, I don't want to say guilty because I don't want him to feel guilty. He knows how expensive his tuition is. And, I think he's has enough awareness to know that, you know, we wanted his dreams to come true. So he attended his dream school, but he's also like, I'm going to need some help. And I'm like, I didn't say we weren't going to help you. Mm-hmm. But I am saying we are not paying your rent.
Yeah.
Because you can come live at home.
You better call Tyrone. Call him. Yeah. So,
ain't no Tyrones in Providence.
Generational wealth.
Let's talk about it.
There's this proverb that gets attributed to Andrew Carnegie, one of the robber barons.
Mm-hmm.
One of the folks who really did like
Carnegie
profit
steal.
From, yeah, he profited from all kinds of cheap labor and was a monopolist and the whole nine. And, you know, he created a financial legacy, though, for sure.
For sure. But I worked for a company whose job it was to manage that family's money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Crazy. So there's this saying, from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. I know you're like, well, what is shirt sleeves?
Break it down. I have images in my head.
Yeah.
I'm thinking colonial times, the big blousing type. You know, the men would wear the prince type. No, that's not what we're talking about.
The funny thing is, like, there's so many of these things that are like old sayings that, like, as Black folks, like, we don't have any reference to some of this stuff. So I had to look it up. Like, what is shirt sleeves? Shirt sleeves means to dress informally, wearing a shirt with no jacket over it.
Oh. Totally the completely the opposite of what I had in my mind.
So what the proverb really means is that the first generation builds the wealth, the second generation enjoys it, and the third generation squanders it, ending right back where they started.
Ah.
From shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations.
Okay. Got it.
And what's crazy, the data kind of supports that.
Hmm.
So there's this concept of wealth decay. Wealth decay, and this is actual statistical studies. There's a study that shows that 70% of wealthy families lose their wealth by the second generation and 90% by the third.
That's bananas.
Wealth decay.
That's 70%. For people who have wealth. So what about those of us who are Gen 1?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. My mind is way down the road.
So the flip side of that is that only 30% of wealthy families keep their wealth until the second generation and only 10% beyond three generations. So meaning like very, very few people actually have generational wealth.
Hmm.
Like the odds are against you that you will be able to do this. I'm not saying it can't be done because I'm like, wait, so tell me about the 10%.
Hmm.
Like that's what I want to know about.
Right.
And we'll talk about both. We'll talk about the 90% and we'll talk about the 10% today. But the odds just aren't in your favor. So let's think about the families that my client asked me about specifically. Let's go through a little case study of them. We'll start with the Waltons. You know, because what's interesting about wealth creation also in this country is though I know a lot of folks believe that in order to be wealthy, you have to be born wealthy. But if you look at our Forbes list, like that's a list of our wealthiest folks in America, most of them are like first generation. Now, look, I'm not saying that their parents were poor,
mm-hmm.
but I'm saying like billionaire status, like most of the folks are entrepreneurs who've been able to do that in their lifetime.
Yeah.
And like that's encouraging for me as a gen. I'm probably gen two. Like I will inherit an inheritance from my parents. But it's encouraging to know that it's not all, like in Europe, it's very different. In Europe, there's a lot of generational wealth, a lot of folks that are descendants of, you know, really wealthy people.
Mm-hmm.
But in the U.S., where it's an entrepreneurial culture, very capitalistic, there's a lot of folks who are first generation wealthy here.
Sure.
Like my man Sam Walton. Again, I don't know how his parents were. I don't know, you know, what it was like being a young Sam. I don't know what his dad did, but he started the first Walmart in 1962 as a general store, a grocery store. The goal was to just help people to save money. And by 1967, he had 24 stores and they were doing almost $13 million a year in sales. And his approach was to really innovate retail, discounting. It was low prices, good customer service, good supply chain. And he created like one of the most valuable corporations in retail history and American history.
Ever.
And we happen to be boycotting them right this second. And I'm not mad at that.
Because
now all of a sudden, DEI doesn't matter.
Well, did it ever really matter there?
Yeah, I used to work at Walmart back in the day.
Did you?
But I did income taxes
at Walmart. Did you? But You were an employee of Walmart and not the tax franchise?
I worked for Jackson Hewitt, but I worked inside of a Walmart.
I remember.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
Yeah. You saw me in there? You were in there shopping?
I had a conversation with you in there one time, and I was like,
yeah, this brother went to college and is now working at Walmart.
I paused for a second, but I remembered it, though.
Yeah.
So fast forward. I know this is not really what we're talking about, but fast forward when we first had a conversation about being advisors, I realized between Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, doing taxes at Jackson Hewitt, our backgrounds were similar in that it felt like we had touched every aspect of a person or a business's financial life in our varied work experience.
Yeah, we really have.
So I remember that.
Mm-hmm. So when I think about the Waltons, one thing that always stood out to me is that, like, Sam has been gone. And when you look at that Forbes list for a long time, he's had three family members in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that shows that there was some planning. Like, there was a lot of strategy that took place to make sure that your kids, as second generation wealthy folks, are now on that list. And by the way, they're not about to go from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves because they've created such a legacy.
Right.
And it's a business legacy, really. Like, that business is one of the largest employers in the country. It's one of the largest companies in the world. And like that's, and they still own a big chunk of it.
Yeah, essentially their family's wealth is tied to the company's success. So mm-hmm. they essentially train them up in the business to be able to continue to run it.
So that's one idea of generational wealth, is to have a business that lives longer than you.
That's one idea of wealth, period. Like, to me, you can't create wealth. There's only really three or four things you can do to create wealth.
Okay.
You can be on, you can own a business.
Okay.
And either continue to grow it or sell it.
Okay. Yep.
Real estate.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And investments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in general.
Yeah.
What else is there? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's different approaches to all three of those things.
Pimping?
But
no, I guess that won't count. No. Because that's not easy.
That would.
Yeah,
go ahead and say
you.
It. I know you want to say it. Go ahead and say it.
Say what?
Go ahead. Just say it.
I don't even
get it
know.
Out of your system.
I don't even know what I'm supposed to say now.
Pimping ain't easy?
I already said that.
That's not what you were.
I already said it. Okay. I said pimping, but it ain't easy.
Yeah.
I broke it up. I said
all
it already.
Right, okay. Whatever.
But yeah, so we're learning from these families. Now, a lot of folks, like this client in particular, is an employee of a company. Right? Now, there are things that she can do to set her future generations up, but like there's a big lesson on generational wealth. A lot of the families we're talking about, the Waltons, the Hermes family, like there was a business that lasted from generation to generation. Now, one thing that they did do, that the Waltons did that was really, really smart, that Sam Walton did, was the concept of an estate freeze. This is the idea that while the company was young, in its infancy, before it was worth billions and trillions, it was a chain of grocery stores that was worth a lot less. He actually gave his kids shares in the company early, and then it blew up.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, there's some estate planning that goes into that. If I give you something that's not very valuable, I'm avoiding any sort of gift taxes at that moment. And then later, if that thing blow up, she waits.
Yeah, that's your basis.
Yeah, I just pushed a lot of wealth to that next generation. Because notice that I talked about his children. Like, this is that next generation. Now, it will be more challenging for those children to pass that wealth on, because now you're talking about really sizable billion-dollar estates.
Yeah.
But I'm saying generation one did that,
yeah.
Set it up so that generation two would be straight. And there's so much wealth, even after paying a lot of taxes, the Waltons are going to be straight for a while.
Yeah.
You have a friend who used to work for the Walton family as well, and the level of wealth is just astronomical. Like, it's just crazy.
What did they do?
They were in, like, policy. Like, they were part of their policy arm. Like, they lobby for
their foundation and philanthropic stuff, or
she worked for the family.
Okay.
I can't remember if it was
maybe a family office situation where
yeah,
they were
like, but like they have folks that are just, hey, this is our lobbying arm for the family.
Mm-hmm.
This is our philanthropic arm for the family. Like, this is our business arm. Like, this is a concierge setup. Like,
yeah.
I need you to just order us the private plane. I need to make sure I can get from, you know, New
sure.
York to Vegas in 3 hours. You know what I'm saying? So like that, that's the level of wealth you're talking about. So big lessons. Number one, have a business that lasts from generation to generation. They took their business public, like having a public company and still owning a lot of shares.
Yep.
And then also doing that estate freeze concept of giving the assets to your kids while they're young, while the assets aren't that valuable, and then letting it blow up down the road. So that is the Waltons.
Blow up as in appreciate.
Like, yeah.
Not like dismantle.
Yeah. There used to be this song. You never heard this. This is Baltimore stuff.
Lord, I'm with
the Morrissey. Are you the bomb? What? Are you the bomb? Oh, yeah. Are you the bomb? What? Then blow up, girl.
Never mind. I think I actually blow up, girl. Did.
You heard that song? Before. That's Baltimore.
I'm right. I was next door in Virginia.
Yeah. But
that
like,
stuff travels.
Yeah. Baltimore and D.C. are very far apart culturally, but very close geographically. Mm-hmm. So I'd imagine Baltimore
really?
To Norfolk, Virginia, or Hampton Roads, Virginia, is that's got to be light
There's
years
so
away.
Many people from
the DMV.
The DMV, period, okay. That it all feels.
Then blow up, girl.
Give me a beat.
All right, Janet.
Instead of blowing up, why don't we go to break?
Okay.
And when we come back, we'll talk about some of these other families, the Kennedys, the Hermé.
I say Hermes, you say Hermé.
Listeners, let us know.
Potato,
how
potato.
Is it? How is it?
Yeah.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So we're back.
Yes.
So who are we talking about next?
So the Kennedys. We've got Joseph Kennedy Sr., who was a Wall Street guy. He was a savvy business guy. His dad actually owned a liquor store. So some of the money he made was in liquor distribution. Like he was around before the prohibition. He bought cases of alcohol. He sat on them and sold them later for a lot of money. But he also leveraged himself to be one of the early distributors after prohibition of certain alcohol brands. And that's how they made a lot of their money. It was the stock market. It was real estate, to your point, real estate investments. And it was, one thing that was different though about the Kennedys is that they thought about like politics as like a realm of attaining power to protect what they have.
Did they ever?
Yeah. And so it's a combination of business acumen, but also like just strategy with the Kennedys.
Yeah. So it shows us something else though too, right? When you're doing that type of generational wealth building and transfer and planning, even the mediocre or less than mediocre person in the family is all right.
Yeah, you're talking about RFK Jr. Right?
I absolutely am talking about RFK Jr. Think about it. Would he be in the role that he's in if his last name wasn't Kennedy?
Oh, absolutely not. And, like, that's legacy right there.
That, like, is legacy.
To be able to pass on nepotism,
like it or not,
to your kids.
Right.
Like,
you don't even have to be good.
And there were some who were great. Like,
there
I think JFK was great. I think Bobby, great.
Robert, mm-hmm.
And then you got the next generation. But I think what it highlights is this idea that there's generation one can only control the wealth that they create, the values that they instill. But then it's on generation two, generation three, to be able to keep it going. So I'm on the board of the John F. Kennedy Library Foundation. Now, presidents typically set up presidential libraries, but the Kennedys also have the Kennedy Center. There's, you know, there's a foundation. Like, there's a lot of other philanthropic entities that have been created by this family that really help them to preserve their legacy.
Sure.
And then they also have had some really great leaders in the family that have created, like, a brand for them that
Absolutely.
Provides that generational nepotism that you speak of.
That's it. I mean, it that's just what it is.
Yeah. If some people think that old Joseph Kennedy was a bootlegger. Like, that's the big, like, the rumor about him, but...
I mean...
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Nor
I wasn't
was I.
there. And then finally, we have the... I say Hermes. You say...
Hermes.
You say...
Hermes sounds like we're trying too hard to pronounce it.
I'm about to go on Google and just hit... You know how they have the little button?
The audio?
Yeah.
How's it pronounced?
Oh, but how do I pronounce it, in English or in French? Okay.
Ah.
It says Hermes.
It's not Hermes. It is not a soft H.
Hold on. Where's the button that you could push? Hold on. I want to push that button.
Should he say it as Hermes.
Like Gomez.
Hermes.
Fine. We're talking about...
I don't think we know anymore.
Yeah.
Than we did 30 seconds ago.
So this company that we are struggling to pronounce properly was founded in 1837. And initially, it was a single shop in Paris that was making horse harnesses for carriages.
Okay.
Like, talk about a pivot at some point.
Still a business.
And it grew. It grew. They started doing bags in 1900. They did leather handbags in 1922. And by 1935, they had named a bag after Grace Kelly, the Kelly bag. And that's where they started to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you have with this family, again, there's a strategic vision, because in the beginning, it was high quality saddles and equestrian leather goods. And they were able to take that quality. Like, what's crazy about some of these brands, like, as I've started to do a little better in life, I've started to pay attention to some of these things. And I'm talking about down to the cow.
Yeah, to produce a particular type of exclusive leather.
Yeah. They have
calf,
like,
hair or whatever.
Word. They've got these cows that are a certain breed, that are the offspring of a certain cow that they've, you know, treated well for years. Like, you ever taste, like, now I'm talking about eating them, but you ever taste Japanese Wagyu steak?
Probably. I'm a foodie. If I have, I wouldn't say probably. Is it one
yeah,
of those things?
It is.
It's one of those things.
So I was in Indianapolis one day, and they had a flight of steaks, like a taste test, a global flight. And so it started with the Wagyu from America.
Mm-hmm.
Then it went to Australia. And when I had the American Wagyu, I'm like, oh, man, what have I been doing? Like, this is great.
Right.
Stop
this
there.
It's different than ground chuck.
Then they took it to Australian Wagyu. I'm like, oh, that American was, like, kind of trash compared to this. When I got to the Japanese Wagyu beef, I'm like, yo, I've been lied to for my whole life.
Wow.
Like, the stuff
was
we
it
eat,
the taste? Was it the texture? All these
the
things?
Next time, I'm next
a foodie.
Time you're at one of these fancy places, just and they've got, they usually
I don't
sell
go
it.
To fancy places.
They literally sell it by the ounce. It's like 1 ounce, 3 ounce. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's because it's incredibly expensive.
Do they have it at the Japanese restaurant around the corner?
No, they do not.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
No, they do not.
Yeah.
You got to go to, like, a high end steakhouse, but,
okay.
like, the way they, and I asked them, like, so what's different? Like, so it's a certain type of cow, but then also they like play jazz for these, like literally like massage the cow, play jazz for them.
No,
like,
mad cows.
Yeah, like yeah. They're treating these cows so well. I think they, even when they kill them nicely. They kill them with kindness first, yeah. I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But either way, the Hermes family, it's been managed from generation to generation with a business that has grown. And they've also done a lot with philanthropy, and they've bought other brands. I mean, again, it really starts with having a business as a big cornerstone of generational wealth. Now, I know we've talked about those families, but we also have some Black families. Some, I know we can't just glorify
talk about it.
These other communities, but you've got the Johnson family from BET, Bob Johnson and Sheila, for that matter, doing quite well.
Respect.
They own a lot of different companies. Like Johnson has a REIT. I don't know if you know that. Bob Johnson has a big
I didn't know that.
REIT. Absolutely. RLJ.
It's not in our model.
Should be, maybe.
We'll add it to the investment committee discussion next time.
Yeah, RLJ Lodging Trust. It's based in Maryland. I've got a good friend who's a top executive there. McBride Sisters. This is now the largest Black-owned wine company in America. I mean, they've got the opportunity for generational wealth. Got Jay and Beyonce.
Yeah, I mean.
LeBron. I mean, LeBron's already on track to be a billionaire if he's not one already. Oprah.
Talk about building generational wealth.
Mm-hmm. And then he's got his son in the league.
I'm saying.
Come on, Kennedy Jr. Come on. Come on, generational nepotism. Mm. Not, I mean, look, the kid's nice. Like, he's not a horrible player.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. But, right. Like, would he have been drafted to the Lakers
right.
after 1 year sure. of very, very mediocre performance in college
sure.
where he wasn't even the third best player on the team? Mm-hmm. Probably not.
But I'm not mad at it because other groups, other cultures have been doing it for generations. And people have a problem with it because
yeah.
they're Black.
Facts. You're seeing a lot of hate right now for Shedeur Sanders. Every day I wake up and I just Google.
Yep.
And they're mad at him for being confident. Like, you can't be Deion Sanders' kid.
And not be confident.
And not be confident. So they're Facts. Upset with him that Shedeur walked into these interviews at the Combine and said, I expect that any team I go to, I'm going to change the outcome of that team. I'm going to make the team better. They're like, how could you say that? He's like, look, history repeats itself. I did it at Jackson State.
Yep.
I did it at Colorado. His stats, by the way, like, he threw for over 4,000 yards with a 74% completion rate with a very mediocre offensive line, really good receivers. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying, like, he was under a lot of pressure and put up, like, the best passing percentage in college football and either number one or number two for yards, for passing yards. Like, come on.
And he got hit a lot.
He got touched.
Yeah.
A whole lot.
A whole lot. But
yeah.
It's different.
So it's different. And then we got Reginald Lewis. Reginald Lewis was one of my heroes of Wall Street, who created the first $1 billion buyout when he bought TLC Beatrice Holdings. I went to business school with one of his nephews.
Oh, that's cool.
I think nephew who's doing really well in life and in business. They've got a foundation. They've got a museum. So there's generational wealth being created. But again, it's typically not necessarily the person who's working a job, but it can be. It may not be on the $1 billion scale. Maybe it's on a smaller scale. But like, we can create multi-generational millionaires while working a job. But some of the things that have happened that, again, going back to that shirt sleeves that you love, Andrea.
Still so funny.
Like, you got to talk to your kids about money early. Like, you can't, it's not just about creating the wealth.
Right.
It's not just about having the hardware in place, the estate planning things in place. It's about making sure that they are ready to receive.
Yes. So what we're really delving into now is, you know, what's happening with the other 90%?
Yeah.
That are not passing on their generational wealth. Mm-hmm. What are some of those barriers and issues?
Yep. There used to be a conference that Goldman Sachs used to put on called the Next Gen Conference, and it was really for the children of wealthy families. And I would go because I'm, you know, young. They're closer to my age. And there's a lot of folks. I mean, what's crazy, I worked with, at Goldman, I worked with the son of the family that used to own the Dodgers, the McCourt family, and they were going through a divorce. I also used to work with the grandson of one of these famous tennis players that had the sneakers. I think the Rod Laver sneakers or one of these sneakers. And
it's before my time, man.
Yeah, I'm just going to say this. I won't say who.
Okay.
But one of these children was incredibly hardworking. One of them was literally probably one of the dumbest people I've ever been around. Okay. Both of them may have gotten their job because of nepotism, being a wealthy family that happened to be a client of the firm. But one of them was actually kicking butt. The other one was not. Mm. So there's not like a presumption that just because you're wealthy, you're not going to work hard. But
oh, yeah.
I do think that work ethic matters. And if you've not taught your kids the value of hard work.
Absolutely.
The value of like showing up prepared.
It's like, not going anywhere.
Yeah.
That wealth is not going to be transferred, preserved, nothing.
Mm-hmm. Spending, I think a lot of what we talked about thus far has been about investing. Having a business. But like, we got to be mindful of the spending lessons that we're teaching our next generation.
Absolutely. By the time this drops, it'll be a week past International Women's Day. And mm-hmm. I was a virtual presenter at an International Women's Day conference. Mm-hmm. And I only had a small window of time. And I said, you know, if there's room for questions, I'll stay extra time to answer some questions. Very nice. And one of the questions that was raised was, just give me one action item to help with retirement planning that anybody can use, regardless of what type of work we do, so on and so forth. And I had to think about it. And I said, well, you know, a lot of retirement planning is about having a spending plan.
Mm.
Because nothing, unless you know how much you think you might need, you got to have a spending plan. And some people don't even have a spending plan for money that they're earning now. So it's that much more difficult to even estimate reasonably what that's going to look like in the future. Yeah. So it's so important to have that spending plan, because otherwise in times of plenty, money literally just blows away in the wind.
Yeah. That's a strong wind. Yeah.
It happens, though.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Other issues that can destroy generational wealth, family conflicts.
Word.
We've seen this. There's an inheritance. This brother ain't speaking to that brother. Instead of working together to hold on to the family asset, whether it be a house, a company, instead it ends up being split up and sold for pennies.
I think in those situations, what I've seen a lot of times, I'm not going to say most often, but a lot, is there is, everybody's evaluating where everybody is. Mm-hmm. And so folks are not happy with what they're given or what they're receiving, because someone believes that they need more help than the next sibling.
Yeah.
Or it's like, you don't even need that. You already got so-and-so. But then the other sibling is like, well, that's because I worked or because of this or that. And it just turns into, it brings up all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Or the family member that supported the parents gets more.
Yes.
Or the niece, nephew, or grandchild that supported the grandparents gets more than the kids do. And that creates animosity and mm-hmm. fighting. Also means that the person creating the wealth, passing on the wealth, has to communicate all this. Like, you can't just assume that they're going to get the will read at the, you know, after the funeral and everybody's going to be good with it. Like, you got to kind of communicate these things. Because I know, like, Kyle Pitts, one of our advisors, he talks all the time about the fact that in his own family, he and his brother received an inheritance of the grandparents' home, and his mom's siblings sued them over it. So those costs, the legal costs, like, that's eating into
it's eroding
generational wealth.
Absolutely.
And that's just a byproduct of not communicating, of folks just feeling entitled. These are things that can destroy generational wealth.
You must discuss this stuff with your family.
Taxes and inflation are big, because it's not just the income tax you're paying today, but it's also the estate taxes. Like, people don't understand that there is a real live death tax. If your estate is over a certain amount, And it changes from year to year. In fact, this year is supposed to end, and there's big fights that will happen in Congress.
They're already happening.
Already happening about what the new estate tax exemption amount is going to be. Currently, it's $13.99 million, but it's supposed to go away and then come back at like $7 million next year, right? Like, meaning if I have an estate bigger than $7 million, now I've got a 50% federal tax plus whatever the state levies on me.
What if I got $700,000? This doesn't apply to us.
Nothing for you to worry about. Like, you good. Like, sleep well at night.
I'm just saying. But that happens, too. Like, what? You have people who are affluent and wealthy, but not at the level that these things start to apply. So some people are like, well, what about us?
But it's funny you say that. Like, if you lived in Oregon and Massachusetts in 2022, their estate tax exemption was just $1 million. So like that person with 700K might need to be a little nervous if their assets are growing.
Truth.
Because again, it's different from state to state, meaning there's a state tax and there's a federal tax. And it changes and it's dynamic. And you got to understand that this can actually destroy wealth in addition to your income tax destroying wealth. And then there's inflation. Like inflation is the idea that life's getting more expensive every year. And even if you're really good at budgeting and saving, if you're not good at investing, if your investments aren't keeping pace with inflation, then you're destroying your generational wealth or your opportunity for it.
So let's go to break.
Okay. Grand idea.
And when we return, we'll talk about this concept that you came up with of software and hardware.
Okay.
Strategies.
I like it. I like it.
You should. You came up with it. I'm okay with that.
I can still like it. I always like our stuff.
I'm comfortable
in
my
show's dope. I always like
new podcasting skin.
Yes, very good.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Okay, so we are back.
Yes.
And we are going to hear from you, Mr. Boomer,
from
about
us.
This concept.
From us.
Well, you came up with this concept of software and hardware as it relates to strategies for building generational wealth.
I like that.
Again, you should.
So before I get into it, the one thing I got to say, disclaimer-wise, I hope that we're not being, like, discouraging with any of this. We've highlighted some really wealthy folks that have created some really successful businesses that have lasted for hundreds of years. It's not the only way to do it.
It's not.
You can create generational wealth that fits for you. Like, that's your wealth passing on from generation to generation.
Sure. And what I said earlier, when I said there's only a couple of things you can do, what I really mean by that is you have to be doing at least one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Just remind us those things again.
Having a business.
That's one.
Investing.
Okay, that's two.
Real estate.
Yeah. Because these are all assets. And real estate in particular is one that can last a very long time. I mean, I would even give you a fourth one. There's probably someone out there that created generational wealth with insurance is probably another one.
Oh, sure.
Let's say everybody buys insurance on everybody. And somebody's going to go. Yeah, people talk about the Rockefeller method to creating generational wealth because Rockefeller had a bunch of businesses, but at the same time, he also, to diversify his wealth, some of the things that he invested in was whole life insurance, which is like a strategy that's not the only thing he did. Like, that's the funny thing when people, when insurance folks talk about this Rockefeller strategy for building wealth, like they omit the fact that he created like these dynasty type companies, these monopolies.
Right.
But you've got a whole bunch of cash, you got to invest it. Some of what he invested in was stocks and bonds, but some of what he invested in was insurance. So, I mean, it can be a part of it. You got to do at least one, maybe you add in a couple others to create the wealth. Because I think what we're getting at is to have generational wealth.
You got to have wealth.
You got to have some wealth. Like, we can't be broke talking about we want generational wealth.
Not going to work.
Yeah, not going to work. So hopefully we're not discouraging anybody out there. So hardware. So hardware is like legal things, investment things that you can do. The software is like values and education, right? So let's talk about the hardware for a moment. So estate planning is a cornerstone of generational wealth because, as I mentioned, there's this thing called the estate tax, which can be really, really big. And there's really only two ways of transferring wealth. One is to give assets to your heirs during your lifetime. The other is to leave them an inheritance at death. And folks who are really doing this generational wealth thing are really doing both.
Yeah.
We have a lot of families that are generation one. And for some of them, they will be above that $13 million mark per person, which for a married couple is like $27 million. Although next year it drops to seven.
Yeah.
I doubt it drops to seven, but that's what it's scheduled to do, which would be $14 million for a combined couple. Like, we've got some wealthy clients.
We do.
You got to understand that. And so, again, all you can do is give some assets now or give it later or do both. And if you do both, you're in a better spot. Because going back to the Sam Walton example, he gave assets to his kids while they weren't that valuable, and those assets grew to be big. And that avoided the estate tax.
Because he gave them while he was alive.
Yeah, because you get an annual gift. Right now, the annual gift amount is $19,000, and that's per recipient. So let's say I've got 10 kids. I could give out $190,000 myself. If I'm married, then my spouse can also give out $190,000. That's almost $400,000 per year. I don't have 10 kids, but you understand where I'm going with this.
You got $190,000?
I hope
that
so.
That you can give. That you can gift?
I hope so. So, like, I've thought about gifting shares.
Yo, Alan, let me hold 10.
10 what?
$1,000.
Well, I'm saying, like, I've thought about gifting my kids shares in Momentum Advisors.
Mm-hmm.
Thought about it.
It's not too late.
Thought about it. Haven't done it. Thought about it with the idea that one day it's going to be incredibly valuable. Right now, I think it's pretty valuable, but, you know, thought about it. You'll be a partner at Momentum.
Hmm.
And you'll think about it.
And I'll think about it.
Mm-hmm. With your kids. But there is power in that $19,000 gift.
For sure.
Because, like, just check this out for a moment. Imagine for a moment I've got enough wealth and I'm worried about that estate tax. And imagine I took 19K and I gave it to my kid every single year. Imagine I'm a single parent with one kid for a moment. And I do this for 30 years. I'm 50 years old now. I do it till I'm 80 years old. Imagine the kid then invests that money and gets a 7% rate of return. At the end of those 30 years, when the kid is in his 40s, I've just given the kid $1.8 million. And that $1.8 million is outside of my estate, which means there will be no estate tax on that $1.8 million. That's a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
So if you want to create generational wealth,
it's like investing,
you got to be giving some stuff away annually.
A little bit at a time.
That's right. Imagine if, going back to you and me with our shares and momentum, imagine we gave $19,000 a year per kid. That's, you got two kids, I've got three. Between the two of us, that's 19 times five. Which is,
I'm not
like
doing that math right now. I'm just letting
almost $100,000 worth of value annually in company shares. You see what I'm getting at? Like,
yeah,
it could
absolutely.
Really, over time, like, we could have given away a big chunk of wealth to the kids.
But all you with do the is annual think gift. About it.
No, we're doing is thinking about
it. I'm just messing with you.
I'm not there yet. Like, yeah. to be keep it a buck, I'm not there yet. Because you don't want to give away all your money to your kids, and then now you don't have anything.
And then you don't have anything,
yeah.
Son.
You see what I'm saying? I've seen families also give loans to their next generation. I had a big client at Goldman who sold a sleep apnea business to GE Healthcare, and he wired me $100 million to pick stocks for him, but also we gave him estate planning advice, and we said, why don't you loan your kids some money, and the kids will then invest the money. And then all you do is get your money back plus interest at a really low interest rate that the IRS actually sets the rate. And if those kids make really wise investments and the kids are investing in venture capital and private equity and hedge funds, then they get to keep all the growth and you just got all that growth outside of your estate. He loved that. And we did that. We structured a really, really large loan from the dad to his children
via
a trust.
So you're giving me an idea.
Yeah.
To my son, for my son,
okay.
who's studying music, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And he might be the next?
He might be the next music director of the next Tony Award-winning musical.
You see what I'm saying? He might be the next John B.
So instead of...
He might be the next Quincy Jones.
He might be.
Mm-hmm.
So I could give him a loan instead of giving him money to spend on rent.
Mm-hmm.
I could make him a loan. And then when he blows up, he just pays me back.
Yeah. Sure could.
And I mean, does this work with affluent or emerging wealth people?
Absolutely.
Same concept.
And you could also decide to forgive the loan, $19,000 worth per year. And
I
that's
could.
Using your annual gift exclusion.
I could. Or I could not. But I could.
Yeah. That's a big one.
I don't know. It's just an idea.
So annual gift is a big one. There's also your lifetime gift, like that $13.99 million. You can give away things in your lifetime that are worth that amount as well, but you can't do that every year. Like, it's a lifetime amount. Like, all I can give away is 13. So we've seen a lot of families that have big wealthy businesses. They create a bunch of different, they call them family limited partnerships, where you've discounted the value of the company by putting it in an array of different entities. And then you're using up your lifetime gift by discounting the value of your company, using up the gift today, but then knowing that once you unravel all those entities and the company does really well,
yeah,
then it'll blow up outside.
You're all into the weeds on the hardware.
Yeah.
And just to be clear for our listeners, when we talk about these gifts, we're talking about exclusions. So amounts that are excluded from your tax liability.
Estate tax liability.
Yes,
yeah.
From your estate tax liability.
Yeah. Go ahead and tell me I'm getting too far into the weeds.
I didn't say that.
I'll receive that.
I just was acknowledging that it is hardware in the sense that it's very technical.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
That's all.
Life insurance is a big part of the hardware. We talked earlier about it as a sort of a source of wealth, but also folks use life insurance to pay their estate taxes. Like, we have a client right now where we're doing a simple structure called an irrevocable life insurance trust.
ILIT.
An ILIT. Like, sounds like eyelid. It's not. But we're using the annual gift of $19,000 per kid, per spouse. We're giving away $40,000 almost per kid. They have three kids now. So that's $120,000 that's leaving the parents' estate every year. And then that $120,000, we're using it to buy some life insurance with the idea that the parents will have a big estate one day and there will be a big estate tax to pay. And if we buy permanent life insurance. We're using universal life in this example. It'll be there to cover the estate tax. This is hardware stuff.
Yeah.
This is if when you do your forecast, you forecast that your net worth will be substantial. It'll be above the $14 million that the number is at today.
You just got to know what your net worth is. Yeah. Like, that's the starting point for everybody. What are you working with?
Mm-hmm.
What's your current financial situation?
Yeah. Other hardware. You got to accumulate. One of the ways you accumulate wealth is as you make more money, you got to contribute more to your investments. Increase your retirement contribution. Increase your brokerage account contribution. Like, we've got to grow our savings rate as we grow our income.
Right. And too many of us, if we're talking about communities of color, we just haven't been able to do that. Some of it is a mindset thing, but some of it is you're Gen Zero or Gen Negative One.
Yeah.
So it's just hard to get to a point where you're using your increases to fund your future.
Absolutely.
Because we're just trying to make it right now.
Absolutely. There's a million tax strategies about generational wealth that we probably don't have a chance to get into today. Most of them are like for folks that own businesses, though, like frankly, like there's not a ton that individuals can do who are working a 9-to-5 W-2 job. I mean, when it comes to avoiding taxes, it's have a business with some deductions,
mm-hmm.
have real estate that gives you depreciation expense.
Yep.
It's give money to charity, and it's put money into retirement vehicles.
That's it.
Is there something I'm missing on taxes? Like, that's pretty much it.
That is pretty much it.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone's going to write in or say something about some complex thing, but at a high level, it's really under one of those categories.
Another one, though, under tax strategies, though, it's going to sound messed up, but dying is a tax strategy. Like, if I have a brokerage account with a lot of investments that have grown by a significant amount, let's say I started out with 100K, I made a bunch of really savvy stock investments, and now it's worth $10 million. If I die, my heirs receive that $10 million with a stepped-up basis, which means they don't have to pay the capital gains tax.
Yeah.
Like when I die, when they receive the $10 million, I say, God forbid, they got it as if they bought it for $10 million.
Right, exactly right.
There could be an estate tax. Again, there's two different levels of taxes.
Yeah.
We didn't even get into generation skipping tax.
GST.
They're trying to make sure that they get the taxes no matter what. Like, you can't be like, all right, I'll leave it to my grandkids instead. Like, no, they're going to add an extra tax on
top
of that.
That's right.
But dying is a strategy if you have assets that have appreciated by a lot. Like, there was the story, the infamous story of the year that Brett Steinbrenner died. I don't know if you heard this story, but there was one singular year where the estate tax went away and he owned the Yankees and mm-hmm. died and got a step up in basis. So there was no capital gains tax and there happened to be no estate tax that year. And that was a dynasty that got sent over to the next generation.
So he said, I'm just going to go ahead and hang it up.
Listen, Don.
Nah, it just worked out that way.
I mean, I don't know.
It's like a strategy, but is it planned?
If I'm on life support and I got billions, I don't know that he was on life support.
Yeah. No, I get it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it's December.
Yeah. I think philanthropy is another part of generational wealth because it's the idea that money is not just for spending. It's also for saving, it's for investing, and it's for charity. And if you can get your kids involved in philanthropy, I think that's big.
It's about values.
Yeah.
And communicating those values to your children, to your family, and they continue on with those things. It creates opportunities for them to work and do meaningful work, but mm-hmm. also it's a wealth transfer strategy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Andre is about to get mad at me. You're about to be mad at me. I'm telling you right now. I'm calling an audible. We're like out of time.
Oh, I'm not mad.
I want to like tell all the stuff.
So we do a part two.
So we'll do a part D.
Joe.
That's
I could
crazy.
Tell just how you fixed your mouth. You were going to go French with it.
So we'll do generational wealth part two. I'm loving this. This is like one of those things, like this is one of those episodes that you should share with your friends. I'll
Back
be texting
to
this to some folks.
Yeah.
And it's powerful and it's information we need to hear and it's stuff that we really shouldn't be rushing through.
Yeah, and real talk, I haven't eaten all day, so yeah. I'm happy to be wrapping this up because I'm going home to eat.
But let me say, honey, the hair is laid, okay?
No, literally, guys.
The silk press is laid.
The headphones just slid down the back of my head. The silk press is super silky.
Now that's silky. That's Silk Sonic silky. Literally.
Why do I talk?
Yeah. So we should end here. What I'll say is this. There is an opportunity for generational wealth in your family. You might be generation one, meaning that first generation, or you might be generation two, but know that it's possible. Yes, business is one way for it to happen, but it can also happen in employment if you're a good investor, if you're a good planner. And when we come back next week, we'll keep the party going. We'll talk more about the hardware, and then we'll get into the software, which we think matters just as much.
That's it.
If you want to talk about this stuff, feel free to visit our website, momentum-advisors.com. The contact page will allow you to schedule time with either Andrea or myself or both. And we'd love to talk to you if you're on this mindset of generational wealth and you got a little bit of wealth already.
We welcome the conversation. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.